conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule, an average daily purse is of $625,000. The nine-week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th, with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's 50-cent pick five with a low 12% takeout and a new carryover provision. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs, racing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? The University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two. 5 minutes in, and Rasai is still here, and I just gave him a couple of ideas. There's people. What's amazing about the racetrack is, and you don't, until you kind of get involved, and Sid is joining us, and he can speak to this too. Until you get involved, you don't really realize that everybody that you come across in nearly every department, when it comes to particularly the racetrack operation, everybody has a direct connection or came off the backstretch or came off of a job. And I just said to him, you know who would be a good interview for you that, you know, is a little different? Denise Stampinato. Kieran McLaughlin rolling by. Denise Stampinato is the horseman's bookkeeper here and has been for an extended period. And Denise was an exercise rider for Woody Stevens and got on any number of the best Woody Stevens horses, Belmont winners. And here she is, you know, working. There came a point when she was in her late 20s where, you know, she started working in the bookkeeper's office and had to make a decision. Rosemary, right here. Rosemary in horse ID. Rosemary was a groom for the Siaka barn for 10, 12, 14 years. And then she got hurt a couple of times, had a broken wrist and this and that, and transitioned into the office. Well, everywhere you look around the racetrack, that's the case. And it's amazing. It's really like nothing else. Sid joins us, and of course we had a brief visit with him while he was on a different kind of backstretch. He was tromping the beautiful new Alapa farm, the new Hill and Dale, with John Sakura last week, and then we saw John days later on Saturday here for Travers. Sid, good morning.
Hey, good good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. Had a fun first hour of Michael Blowen and this Rasai Harper, who's doing the real players inside the backstretch videos that I'm sure you've seen on social media. Sid, tell us more now. You've had the benefit of having had the tour, and it sounded like you were eating it up. Tell everybody about Alapa.
Well, first, I want you to, or you can retweet it to your listeners, but I have a my column today in today's TDN is on that visit, Steve, and I'm going to talk about it too, but there's a lot of detail. This is just an incredibly beautiful farm, but it's so historically significant, and it's got a lot of really unique history behind it. It's over 100 years old, and what makes the place fascinating is that the guy who developed it, Edward F. Sims, around 1915. The farm had existed before, but that's when he kind of bought out his brother and turned it into what it is. You know, this guy was making incredible amounts of money back then, wildcatting for oil. You know, one year in 1917, he made $20 million a year, $20 million in one deal, and that, if you value it in today's currency, it's $480 million, and that was just from one deal. But basically, he was a Yale-educated engineer, architect, and a lawyer from educated at the Virginia Law School, and he just had this passion for building his farm up. And what's great about it is Sakura appreciates that, and he shares that passion, and he has not only restored a lot of it, but he's also enhancing it. He's planting a lot of plants, for example. The place is just filled with, plants, which was one of the obsessions of Sims. And it's got a lot of historical artifacts on it. It's got sculptures made by really well-known artists from that period. The gardens are landscaped by Jens Jensen, one of the premier landscape architects at the time. It's a visually stunning farm. It's got incredible physical presence, and it's got this great history behind it. So, back in the 1920s, 30s, it was as big as Claiborne, which is its neighbor, only about 7 miles away. And that's another fascinating part of this, Steve. You know, Claiborne has stayed in the same family, the Hancock family, and has continued forward. Sims died in 38, and by the 50s, there weren't any horses on the farm. In the 60s, Bill Hancock leased the training barn, and that's where he broke all the Claiborne horses and Claiborne clients' horses, because that training barn, it was a massive structure, adjoined a one-mile training track, and, horses like Buck Passer, Ruffian, Queen of the Stage, all these great champions from the 60s and early 70s were broken there by the Hancocks. And Hancock also had a stallion annex there where a few of the stallions were kept. So there's all this incredible history behind this farm. And, it's kudos to John Kudos that he, very much aware of it and is restoring the farm and keeping the history of it alive and actually researching more into it. And this, you know, there's a chance that Frances Karen, who accompanied me, obviously she's with Workover Consultants, but she's a racing historian, you know, she might write a book about it.
Well, and you know, from what we, you know, we've seen so far, and I'm really looking forward to visiting, you know, coming up in these next 2 weeks, or when we come back for Breeders' Cup, we'll have a couple of different opportunities. Couldn't get there during the Derby lead up in the spring, but every image you see, Sid, it just looks, you know, majestic. It looks like a, you know, like it's a movie set.
Exactly, it's like Xanadu. And this guy, Sims is like Charles Foster Kane.
Yeah.
Now, by the way, I want you to, the reason I wanted you to retweet is that in the Firewatch, there's a thread with the article, and then I've added a bunch of photos that didn't appear in the TDN column. So they've never been seen in the press that I took with some explanation. So there's like a string of 8 photos, which you'll be able to see on Twitter. And so you'll be able to get even a better grasp of the physicality of the place. Not to mention, you know, some of the historical artifacts that I've also photographed and put up there as well.
Pulling it up right now, and I will send it out. And I just pulled up the little thread logo so people know to not just look at the link and not just pull up the page at TDN, but also thumb through and just get a feel for the incredibly picturesque, idyllic setting and the way in which John is in process of restoring its grandeur and you know, in every element. And, you know, that's a valuable... an invaluable debate that and process, Sid, that is going on in and around Lexington in general, which is the preservation of green space and the preservation of the historic properties that dot Central Kentucky. And you know, there's real concern. I mean, just like there when you know the reason there was such, you know, terror and furor when Calumet was threatened. I mean, the idea of you know, Calumet being chopped up for development had people aghast. So when Heinrich Dikwatowski saved it, and Brad Kelly, you know, providing the continuity, it you know, just a very important part of Kentucky culture and the environs.
Yeah, no doubt, Steve. That's a great point. And, you know, when you think about it, now Jalapa has come back and along with Claiborne, you've got, you know, two big farms, two big historic farms, both 100 years plus, both in inextricably linked neighbors that are back, you know, in existence again. Claiborne, of course, never went away, but now Jalapa is back. And you know, you've got these horses, Colin is standing there. You know, it's for future historical reference, this revival by John Sikora is going to be, you know, terrifically significant, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's...
No doubt.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a new... Basically, you know, you trade off the history and you write new chapters.
Right. And, you know, how about writing a chapter now with a sounding like, you know, a current line, which is great. I mean, yeah, it's... And getting back to your point, by the way, there's so many great farms, Kentucky farms, that have disappeared, and others that are still in states of, you know, flux. I mean, Elmendorf, for one. You know, you had Max Gluck and Jack Kent Cook, and then, you know, it's in a void now, really. And there's several other farms like that that were historically so important to Kentucky and the bluegrass. And, you know, so...
We'll take it, and with that said, I do want to... It's funny, because Michael Blowen was with us in the first hour, and we gave the instructions for reaching Michael and visiting old friends, but I'll also direct people to visithorsecountry.com, where, in fact, they've got a Breeders' Cup Week section, but you can plan visits, book tours at countless farms. Public, you know, there's public group tours, there's private tours to be arranged. This has been a phenomenally successful Kentucky tourism initiative. Visithorsecountry.com, and of course there's also the Bourbon Trail that is incredibly popular. I mean, there's, you know, this is really the way Michael turned, you know, retired stallions into a tourist attraction. The state has gone a long way toward, you know, sort of codifying horse country as a, you know, as an entity. It is the signature, remains the, you know, Kentucky's signature industry. We'll do a lot of this, I'm sure, with the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund while I'm at Kentucky Downs over the next coming 2 weeks. So,
horsecountry.com. In fact, it's funny you should mention that, because after spending the morning and early afternoon at Jalapa, we went over to Claiborne, and Bernie, you know, gave us a private tour. But while we were there, there were a group of 30 people on one of these horse country tours, and that was really amazing to witness. On a, you know, it was just a week ago Wednesday, so like a Wednesday afternoon, there was that much interest for people to come out and take a tour of Claiborne. There's no question that these farms are historic identities of Kentucky and the bluegrass, and the history of this game is extremely attractive and popular for people. I find that every time I write something historical, it gets the most reaction, too. So I can definitely see where the interest is coming from.
I love it. Well, perfect way to transition, Sid, from the visit into the results of the weekend, because it was a very good weekend for curling between Malathat winning the personal Ensign and Cody's Wish upsetting the Forego and Jackie's Warrior. Now, of course, if Jackie's Warrior had won, it would still be it would have been good for Hillendale.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Because of McLean's music. But you know, here's Curlin with a new grade one winner in Cody's Wish. And it's an amazing story. I had Danny Mulvihill yesterday, who, of course, is the farm manager at where is he? Gainsborough? Gainsborough, I think. And not just a great Saturday for Hillendale. How about Sunday? Ghost Zapper gets a new Grade 1 winner in Goodnight Olive. So it was a huge Hillendale weekend.
And not only that, but that's the weekend following the weekend where Nest won the Alabama, and Moira by Ghost Zapper just devastated Colts in the Queen's Plate. Nest, of course, by Curling. So it's back-to-back weekends of high-powered...
That's a great point.
Yeah.
Great point. Yeah.
And not only that, but Army Mule has three winners over the weekend. He now has 11. He's number 3 on the freshman list by winners and number 5 by progeny earnings. And at number 4 is Hillendale's son of Curlin, Good Magic.
It's all happening. It's all integrated. I've got to talk to you too. Said about the, let's talk about Epicenter for a minute. And even though you and I have already discussed this, every time Gunrunner comes up, and frankly every week, every weekend is a good weekend for Gunrunner. He got Society winning that Charlestown Oaks, and you know, there's no news really with Gunrunners firing off every which way. But we had Ron Winchell on television on Sunday. We had such a fun time with him, and we're going to talk to him again next week at Kentucky Downs. But you know, he was talking about what you and I discussed, the Tappet Mares with the Gunrunner covers, and it's unbelievable. And he knows how fortunate he is, but the continuity that he is authoring from his father's tutelage and his father's you know, long-running success in the game, the fact that Tappet was the last horse, or the last horse they bought together, and now provides this link. And then here's Ron, you know, moving on with Gunrunner, and he's going to have, you know, this son of Not This Time to merchandise as well in Epicenter. It's astounding.
And the Grade Two winner by Gunrunner, you noted, Society, bred by Peter Blum, she's out of a Tappet mare.
He mentioned that, actually. He was right on top of that, in fact. And, you know, we also didn't... He had to remind me, Sid, but I forgot about Silver State.
Yeah. Silver State, who I saw, by the way, is one of the horses I wanted to see because I hadn't seen him during the COVID period. And that's one of the reasons I went to Claiborne, and I got a chance to see Silver State, the Met Mile winner, right there. And he served 171 mares at Claiborne.
You know, it's funny, 171 mares, that's the quietest... I mean, I literally had forgotten about him. I felt silly, actually, that he had escaped my, you know, my view.
Yeah, no, it's so funny you should mention that, because I always like to see all the stallions, and since I hadn't actually been to Kentucky since January of 2020, and this was August of 2022, was my first visit since then, I missed a bunch of these horses coming in. So he was one of them that I really wanted to see. And he's a nice horse, and he was obviously super popular, too. So, you know, we always mention this with Winchell and the incredible, you know, embarrassment of riches. And it really is something.
Sid, the Jack Christopher's win in the Alan Jerkins, that bodes well for him, of course. Not, you know, not that he wasn't well on his way, but as a son of Munnings, you know, here's like another step removed. Spites down to Munnings, and now it looks like Jack Christopher will be next in that line.
Yeah, he's really, you know, an exceptional stallion prospect. I mean, he's so fast. He's a, you know, a prototypical miler, sprinter miler, which Munnings is really noted for. And obviously, he's got all these big names now behind him. He's obviously going to stand at Coolmore. And, you know, he fits that profile. He's a very exciting horse.
Well, who else can we feature in here? I think from the weekend, as I catch up a little bit, Art Collector wins the Charlestown Classic, the Bernardini son, and
he'll be going to Claiborne. He'll be standing at Claiborne down the line, and that's going to be a great opportunity for a really good son of Bernardini to get another chance, you know.
Absolutely. When you think about when you say that, it does make sense, because First Samurai, right? First Samurai and Bruce Lunsford, the relationship,
Yeah.
Well established.
Yeah. That's right.
You know, a couple of other, got to say one thing, too, about from the weekend. How about the Midnight Bizou brother verifying? And here's another justified debut winner. And Sid, I mean, he's close to 50% with his debut runners. It's unheard of.
Not only that, Steve, it's not even the end of, we're right at the end of August, and he's had four stakes winners, three of them group or graded winners, which is, you know, phenomenal.
Let me go to the Stallion Register for a second, because I do want to see the current number. I'm curious. And yeah, Statuette, Aspen Grove, Just Cindy, and Just a Warrior. But let's see. Here we go. Rankings. this says 30. I wonder if this is that current. It sure feels like when I looked last time, he had a higher percentage. This says 31 runners and 11 winners. But when I looked at some stats on Thoroughgraph, he was at 39% like a week ago with the debut.
I don't know if Thoroughgraph incorporates Europe.
That's a fair. You know what? That's possible. Mm-hmm. It might just be domestic runners.
Right. And you know, he's the son of Scat Daddy, and only Scat Daddy's sons. That's why the loss of combatants to your farm in New York is such a shame, because all these Scat Daddy stallions from Mendelssohn's come alive, Caravaggio, Justify all over here, and then in Europe, you've got No Name Never is just absolutely on a tear, and the first crop sire, Sioux Nation, also at Coolmore, is shrinking at he was an inexpensive stallion too, and he actually stood at one of their satellite farms, and now at the main Coolmore facility, he's got just a tremendous number of winners as well as two group winners. So the Scat Daddy factor is starting to play very much, and those farms lucky enough to have a son of Scat Daddy, you know, Scat Daddy died when he was 11, they really have a chance to get something going based on what we're seeing so far.
Well, there was also, we should also include, if we're looking at first crop results through, you know, this portion of the, tomorrow is September 1st, so we got basically four more months, and right now, the leader in number of total winners, Sharp Azteca, 17 winners, and this horse in Iowa, that Tyler's Tribe, did you see that performance?
Yeah, I've actually been following him from the beginning, from the second start, because I did an article on Sharp Azteca a few weeks ago, and what struck me was the buyer's speed figures and the times, those his races, were just absolutely phenomenal. I mean, he's winning by 15 lengths, and sometimes you think of, they're Iowa bred, but then when you frank that with the actual raw times and then the speed figures, he's really some kind of story.
Yeah. Yep. Tyler's Tribe, 94 buyer winning the Prairie Meadows freshman over the weekend, and actually even the filly in the debutante, a run happy filly, Somebody's Problem, that Greg Foley sent over, and got an 84 buyer. So Iowa breds with something extra, more or less.
And don't forget the one that won at Monmouth on turf, Sharp Azteca, for Doug you know, the guy from California, Doug...
Doug O'Neill.
That colt is going to run in a $500,000 race at Kentucky Downs on the turf. So, you know, you're going to start to see Sharp Azteca potentially try to upset some of these highly regarded horses. And he stands, by the way, at Quick Chimney.
Yes. What are they going to do with, right now they're listing, but I suppose, you know, we're not far away from the announcements of next year's fees, but right now Three Chimneys has them listed as privates.
Well, Gunrunner is going to be standing for...
The Sharp Azteca.
Oh, well, Sharp Azteca is going to definitely, he's had shares being traded in him right now for like $45,000-$50,000. Likely he's going to stand for, you know, $15,000, unless this Powers Tribe wins the, you know, the Breeders' Cup. But he could go up $15,000 and higher. And Gunrunner, you know, he's going to stand for at least $250,000, if not more.
Here's a couple of little sidebars that are interesting. You know, Girvin, of course, got some early season publicity because of Damon's Mound, and quite deservedly. But right now, with 72 foals in his first crop, he's had 20 runners. He's hitting at 50%. He's had 20 runners. He's got 10 winners.
Yeah, I mean, he's really overachieving down at Ocala Stud in Florida. And, yeah, he's a great one winner, and you never know, but Florida always seems to, you know, that land down there, and the weather, and he's throwing a good horse down there, and he tend to overachieve a lot. And, he's definitely, a really great surprise. He's also on the tail of the caddy, which is Mr. 50's down.
Sid, we're sending everybody to TDN for this week's edition of Taking Stock, and a fabulous trip to Alapa. And I appreciate the specifics, and I haven't read it yet, so I will enjoy it. I'm noticing the pictures too. Now I'm more excited than ever to get out there. But Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale, particularly this week after Sid visited. So, Sid, talk next
week. We'll talk next week, Steve. Thanks again.
I appreciate it. We'll be coming to you from Kentucky Downs, actually, when we talk to Sid next week. And speaking of Kentucky Downs, top of the hour, we'll be joined by Hammer. Right now, we're joined by the incredible developing story as we say hi to Kerry Medever. There he goes. There goes Kerry. The story of the meet with 6 days remaining. The excitement. I was having trouble with this thing earlier, Tom. So let's try it again. I don't know if it's because I moved it around from home, but the mic was giving me a hard time. So let's try again. Say hello.
How you doing?
Hold on, wait a minute.
How about now?
All right, good? Yeah, don't move it a lot. Hold it very steady, if you don't mind.
I can't hold things steady with Chapazian sitting next to me.
I know you're nervous. We know that the flop sweat could come any second.
No. I got, yeah.
We've got John Chapazian here as well. And, John, this is a complete reversal from a year ago,
exactly, yeah,
where Tom had rushed out to a lead, had maintained the lead, and then you came like a freight train by a hobo. And this time, it's a different scenario.
Last year, he had me by 12 at one point, and this year, I had him by 10 at one point.
And you, Steve, proclaimed that I had no shot.
I would never say that.
I'm here to say I have a shot. I'm in the hunt, at least, going to the last weekend. Last week.
Well, obviously. I mean, you could, and what is John, what do you think? What has been the key to getting, you know, to for him to come roaring back?
He's been doing good. Just flat out, he's been doing... I just told him, when he came up with Malafat on Saturday, I mean, how did you possibly come up with that? I mean, she won... I mean, I was...
Who'd you pick?
I picked the Latruska. Clarier second. I don't think I even had Malafat third.
I didn't either.
And there's only five horses in the race.
Well, that's you know, which basically throws the whole five horse field nonsense. It throws it into a cocked hat because when you've got four horses like that,
right?
Now, of course, Clarier, you know, had the trouble in the gate and pretty much was taken out of the race. However, Malafat might have won that race anyway. To be honest, the way it unfolded.
Exactly. Yeah.
So do you sense that your season has been pretty much consistent throughout? Have you, did you have a lull at all?
Here and there, but the good news is this. This is the real good news. There was one day where I had eight winners.
Yes.
And that day where I had eight winners, I was wearing this shirt that I'm wearing today.
Oh, well.
It's the old lucky.
I didn't know he had that.
So.
It's the lucky shirt angle.
I wear the same shirt every day, so I'm good. I'm lucky or unlucky.
Well, but you've also got the red leg hat on.
Yeah, I'm supporting. You know, I've been wearing the Reds hat all year, so they stink, but that's okay. There's always next year. I'm ready for football season.
The Bungles.
The Bungles will be back too.
They had a good year last year.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Great.
So, Shep is. He's killing me. We had Charles Bedard was out to a rocket fest.
Oh, he was hot. He was really hot. Oh,
that's right. Yeah.
John reeled him in, and he probably, you know, I'm guessing he was thinking he was home free. I got on a little run, thankfully.
Big run.
Yeah, like he said, it was 10 at one point.
It was 10.
At day 25, it was 5.
And then
he
picked up 2-2 on me back to back.
Over the weekend. Yeah, it was a good weekend. Yeah. You know, Malafat, I liked her. She had beaten Clarier 4 out of 6 times. So now she's beating her 5 out of 7 times. So I like the scoreboard. You know, that's you are what your record says you are. So that's why I liked her. That not only that, but, you know, reading the special, Joe talked to Todd after the race and just said, and Johnny, and they both were like, she was so flat in the shoe V. You know, it was very hot. And the heat, everybody says, oh, they all got to run in the heat. But, you know, weather affects people and it affects horses differently. And just reading that insight from Todd, you know, that I really only read from Joe's story. Thankfully, I get to get the first read on it most days. I read that, and I thought, okay, I want to give her another shot. I did see some pictures of her schooling prior to the Travers Day, and she looked great in the paddock. You know, she was on her hind legs and looking fresh, certainly not looking like a horse that was flat. So, you know, that's how I came up with that one. But, you know, There's been a lot of misses too, some big whiffs, but we're hoping to get it rolling today. I think it's interesting today. I know John and I probably both were thinking after that weather forecast yesterday that we were going to have to deal with a lot of MTOs.
Exactly,
there weren't a lot of MTOs in some
right,
of the races.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think we both kind of handicapped looking at his picks.
Yeah,
and then look, you know, I see his picks. I really almost his picks come in before mine. And I purposely do not look at them because I'm like, that'll affect me. But I kind of have a good sense of who he's going to pick.
He's not convinced.
When I go through the races, I know. I always say, I bet you Shabazian picks this horse. You know, so sometimes I'll say, all right, I'll
take a peek.
Yeah. I'll take the center square too, and I'll go where he goes. But I don't do it all the time.
So we are going to get to a point where this is going to get into game theory and into contest play
right.
about, you know, not necessarily blocking or but
what is you, that, know. You know, make him catch me or vice versa, you know.
Well, when I had the lead last year, people that I know were like, well, don't you get his picks first? Why you have the lead on him, why don't you just pick the same thing as he does and you won't lose?
No, that's just all. You can't
so
do that.
If anyone ever questions my sportsmanship,
you can't do that.
I just turn to that.
Yeah.
So, but I did not do that. Obviously, gave it up late.
The last
funny
day.
Thing is, John. Yeah, he John led actually into the last weekend
by
one. He came back on me. Yeah,
yeah.
I came back. I tied it up, and then he kind of spurted away again. And then I was trying to rally, but It was fun. You know, obviously got beat on the last day, and my buddies that I was here at the races with were like...
The last race, though, I'm up by one going into the last race of the meet. We have different horses. My horse comes in first. Tom Horse comes in second.
Yeah, and there's an inquiry.
Inquiry.
Okay. I forgot. I didn't realize that.
Inquiry.
I didn't realize that.
So they're blanking my horse. I said, so if they take him down, which was, it was not impossible, it would have been a dead heat. So
I'm over at the four-star Dave with buddies of mine, and we're all like, wait a minute.
It's not over yet.
And what? Then they, afterwards, they're like, we're going to give you an hour, and you got to get over it, and we're going to have fun the rest of the day.
John, what has been, you know, for you, what have been some of the better scores? What spots did you latch on to? And
I don't know. It's, I was telling Tom a few minutes ago in the, was it the fourth race, the grass race? There's a horse coming in from the West Coast. Social Star, the five horse in the fourth race.
Today?
Yeah. Looks really, really interesting to me.
Yeah, this is the former Richard Mandela horse. Ran some graded stakes out there, sprinting, and, going a mile on the grass. I'm sure, like, she's a horse, when I handicapped, I was like, well, she's 5 year old. 5 year old, she's run five times.
Yeah.
South American bred. I don't know, they'd run her on the main track.
But the woods look good.
They did before, but...
If you look at the past buyers, I was telling Tom before, I think the grass buyers tend to be 5 or 6 point higher than the dirt buyers. And so when this horse puts up a 91 dirt buyer, it's really probably a 98 grass buyer. And if this horse can run a 98 buyer, he's going to blow this field. She's going to blow this field out of the water.
John, we discussed this last summer, and since this is our first sit down together, we only had one phone visit.
Yeah.
But give everybody your basic handicapping approach and your premise when you're looking and how it's Saratoga with all the turf racing we've got. Give us a little feel for your dirt approach and your turf approach.
Well, I don't really have any, Every race is different. And you can't do things the same. Yeah, you can't do things same every time. And you turn the page to a new race, and everything is different. You just, So I don't really have a, I mean, I look at the conditions. Who's it for? Post position, I give more play to than probably most people. I tend to go with the inside on grass races, and I tend to go with outside post position and dirt races.
But you also do a lot of research. Like, you do a lot of replay. You watch a lot of replay.
Yeah,
you,
oh, no,
you've
for sure.
You told me that before.
Yeah.
And that's something that you do, like, in the middle of the night almost, right?
I do, yeah. Well, you see what time I send the picks in.
Yeah, his picks are in early.
Like 4 o'clock
I'm out
in the
morning. Backstretch in the morning, I see the notification that the picks are already in.
Yeah.
So
I slept late this morning. I got up at 2 o'clock. So...
I'm the same way.
Yeah, you got it, yeah.
Same way.
I got up at 3 o'clock today. We delivered the papers all over town.
Nice.
Sean and I, our delivery guy, was out.
Wow.
So that was the first time I've ever done that with the Saratoga Special.
Really?
Every year there's something new. I've done the papers on the backstretch in the grandstand clubhouse, but today we delivered them around town. Put them all in my car.
Thank you, Eric Donovan.
Like old timers day with the music,
I mean, come on. I mean, it is.
Let's attract a younger audience to the track, and they play this music.
Yeah. Well, it's
anyway.
It's different every day, though. It's weird.
It is.
Whoever's picking out the Muzak,
I think was here. It's
blaring.
Back,
right? It's just, I mean, crazy. So, thank you to Eric Donovan who came by and got it adjusted.
That was clutch.
Thank you.
We needed that.
John, I have found it maddening this season on the grass side, dealing with races that look like a front runner is going to wire,
right,
and gets swamped.
Exactly.
And then you look at a race that looks like it's going to have legitimate pace, and the horse ends up. I've been on the wrong end of that repeatedly this meet with horses that I felt you know, are my kinds of plays, are you know, middle distance long shots that I key off of.
7-1, 6-1,
6-8,
yeah.
12-1.
Yeah.
That's my wheelhouse.
Right.
And but specifically with the turf routes, frankly, turf sprinting this meet I have found bizarre as well. I mean, you look at turf sprints where you think, all right, you know, speed should, you know, should blitzkrieg this, and they get swallowed up. It's been very tricky, and you know, I don't think we've heard as much snatch and grab critique right.
Yep.
I have not seen, you know, that is a theme in New York for years, and of course Andy Serling is the Lawrence Welk of cheerleading when it comes to that. I mean, nothing drives all of us more crazy than guys, you know, grabbing up and thinking every horse they're on needs to come from off the pace. But this season it feels like there hasn't been a lot of that squawking.
All right.
No, not by me.
How, you know, you know what else hasn't been discussed widely? Has anybody been tracking the one turn mile, the Wilson shoot results for trends? I haven't seen any
for post position trends. Or
yeah,
speed
or, yeah, or just yeah. or just
certainly starting to build a big enough sample. You
yeah.
know?
Huh?
I
mean,
yeah, one
trend
and a half turn.
Yeah.
Chuck Simon says that he's got a trend. He can't cash a ticket on him.
I don't know if there's been an inside bias as far as the...
It doesn't seem like it.
No.
It feels
fair.
Like it's been... Yeah.
Right.
It's interesting. I mean, all the things that we worry about going into a season...
Yeah. I think it's worked out well, to be honest with you. I was very skeptical, to be honest with you, when they first started. But they move it out, and the one post is really coming out probably the 5 or 6 spot in on the gate, which gives it more of a, you know... more of a fair chance for the outside horses to get position. And is there a limit on the number in the stall?
10.
10.
Yeah.
Okay. Have they had 10?
I think they've had a 10 horse field.
Maybe.
Yeah. No, it's been they for the first time, right? They had the first off the turf the other day. For the first time, they used
the chute.
They used the chute where they thought, you know, instead of making babies, you know, this was the opportunity, and they had the first opportunity to utilize it that way as an off the turf. And we may be, I tell you, we may end up. It looks like we're free and clear, I think, right? Through Monday.
Range looks great.
Unbelievable. Yeah. So we're going to have literally 11 races?
Yeah.
It's just cold. Well, that's because your blood has been thin, Chuck, from all your years in Florida. Chuck is like, it's cold.
Yeah.
It's 72 degrees, and he's got a sweatshirt on. It's unbelievable.
And long pants. Yeah, there you go.
He's from here, me.
You would think. Well, Mike Welch is from Boston, and yet he's become, he's like a hothouse flower now. You'll see him with a turtleneck today and a jacket. He'll be wearing his Jack Wolf Starlight jacket.
There you go.
We got about 6-8 minutes. Let's get some Wednesday opinions.
I'm glad the jump race is back on.
Yeah, yeah. We've got 2 days.
Yeah.
2 days of jump. We'll talk to Bill Gallo at 11:30.
Yeah. I thought that performance by Snap Decision was just.
Oh yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
When he made that at the quarter pole last time, I mean, people were standing up and just cheering. And what did he win by 20? I know what he whatever. It was just
giving a lot of weight too.
Yeah, like was he carrying 170 or what was it? I don't even 164 whatever.
164.
Yeah. So man, that was a performance.
Yeah, today's tricky. You know, with some of the races, I like a horse that's a little bit of a price in the sixth race. Wine Goddess, the ultimate drop, the maiden special weight down to the maiden 40, state bred, Horacio De Paz, you know, for Barry Schwartz. Horse listed at 8-1 on the line, ran a pretty good race on the main track, got beat by Valleluia, of course, one of the stories of the meet. That was in the May, came back and ran on the grass, just kind of a mid-pack, no-punch kind of race, a little bit of a layoff, but the horse looks like should handle the grass, bred for the grass, maybe a decent price. You know, in a kind of a race that I thought was a little bit wide open. There's a few other droppers in here. You know, the 5, Sal's Dream Girl, and the 4, Eau Claire, probably going to take a lot of the money. I took a little bit of a stab there. That's one of the, you know, when I get through the races, I kind of look and see how many do John and I have different.
It's funny.
And there's
see that
few,
right there?
So, yeah.
That's exactly what that is.
Yeah, he writes down
races 4, 5, 6, and 9 are different.
As the tricky races.
Ones. Yeah, and as the ones that we're different on.
Well, I see. The races that you races that you have different selections.
Different, yeah.
So who'd you end up with in here, John?
In that race, I thought the on Sal's Dream Girl.
Sure.
I threw out the last race because she came from the number 12 post, mile and a 16th. Now she's what, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 horse?
She's the 5.
So I just threw that last race out entirely because of the poor post. She couldn't get position. Rosario didn't impress her. She's on the inside. She drops. I think she can dominate the race, to be honest with you.
Sal's Dream Girl, 2-1 with Pratt for Danny Gargan.
Yeah, she too. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I'll go outside to the 10. I thought Soretta of Jimmy Bonds. Mm-hmm. Was tough, has got to work out a trip from the 10, and I suppose Eau Claire is the other horse. So 4, 5, 7, and 10 between the two of us, and of course it is great to see the fabulous star of Caddyshack on display here, Lacey Underall. that is one of the great character names in all of film history.
Yeah.
And
good feature today. Stayed on the grass.
Yeah, talk about the with anticipation. Yeah. Good idea. I've got a price in there myself.
Yeah, do you really?
Yeah. Well, I picked Wayne Catalano's horse, and the winner is. I don't know if it's because I was at Keeneland the day he won. It looks like a horse that really wants to go
the distance,
long.
Yeah.
You know, he won going 5.5 like a freight train. You know, kind of a late closing turf sprinter kind of look. Wayne wanted to run him in at Royal Ascot. He was eligible for a race over there for horses by sires or dams that have won at a mile and a quarter. You know, he was like, all I had to do was put him on the plane. I felt like I was going to win. The race was won by like a first-time starter maiden that was like 50-1, I think. And he kind of just said, I'll just wait for this race rather than run in the Skidmore or, you know, some other spot. Wanted to run the long, you know, two turns here. Reunites with Pratt. You know, Oscar Performance is doing well.
Got a sharp workout on the 14th.
I mean, I think the 1, Battle of Normandy, is probably the horse to beat. You know, coming off impressive win back on the 6th. You know, runs back in 25 days for Shug. West Point, they're going to be fired up. So that horse will take a lot of money, no doubt.
But they're having a good meet, too, aren't they?
You know, I think Ian Wilkes' horse, too, came back and won really well after the Mo Strike race, ran in against him on the dirt. You know, he was, of course, we talked about in the stable tour with Ian, and he was high on him. And then he won a huge price, 21-1. So I don't know if you missed him at 21-1, are you gonna take him at 4? You know, it's kind of like betting Rich Strike now. You know, like how do you bet Rich Strike if you missed him at 80? You know, I got to get a huge price on him in the future going forward, but. And then, you know, Mitch Friedman's horse.
Oh, that's who I picked.
Yeah,
that's who I like.
Him.
Noble Huntsman.
Yeah.
And, you know, here's a horse that's gone 5.5 twice. He's by Noble Mission.
Yeah.
Sonny Galileo. And there's every reason to believe that the stretch out to a mile is going to be in his wheelhouse.
Yeah.
At 8-1, when you know the rest of this field has got more, you know, more high profile names associated, you know, guys like Mike Dinney and John Stevens figure to, you know, be under bet Lacey Gaudette. Could be a big day for Lacey's. Lacey Underall and Lacey Gaudette.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey now. Chuck. Say again? Oh, she was the beneficiary. That's right, of that crazy DQ. That you're right about that.
Otherwise, he's on the AEs and determinedly he's probably, you know,
good
maybe,
point.
Maybe they both are.
Well, and let's see. You know, it's coming up on 11. Let me see if Andy. I'm sure Andy has.
I heard there may be a scratch that the 6 may come out.
Well, then let's. That would be, you know, that Bramble Blaze. That's the aforementioned Mike Dinney. And of course, Seth Merrow's coming, and I guarantee you, he picked Mike Dinney because he's just a sucker for Mike Dinney. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah. That in Augustan Stables.
Where the white
exactly. Just. too crazy. Let's see. There is, in fact, actually, there's four scratches.
Really?
The 4, 6, 7, 8 have all come out. Wow. 4, 6.
So the 8 was 7. The half to runaway rumor.
That Lachaise, yeah.
Daddy, my heart belongs to daddy there, Lachaise, yeah.
Well, so Cassie gets in with determinedly, yeah. And at 6-1 with Johnny V becomes a serious consideration. Wow, that throws this into a tizzy.
You're left-handed.
I am left-handed.
I was talking to Seth the other day. I'm left-handed. Seth is left-handed. You're left-handed, and I'm pretty sure Anthony Mormino is also.
Well, you
left-handed.
were doing good until then. You just blew the turn.
I wonder if there's anything to it.
Well, I will recommend a book by a professor at the University of British Columbia called "The Left-Handed Syndrome." Which posits that, in fact, every human should be right-handed. That in the animal world, animals are 50-50. Cats and dogs and so forth are 50-50 left-sidedness or right-sidedness. Humans are 90% right-handed. Dr. Stanley Coren, I believe, is the psychologist, and he studied handedness for his entire life. He believes it's a birth defect, essentially. That
you're right-handed?
That anybody is left-handed.
Oh, really? Okay.
That nobody should be. That the brain is built so that everyone should be right-handed. Part of the study includes, he basically had a control group of handedness, and the left-handers died off much faster. Wow. And he thinks for a variety of reasons, including the way roads are designed and cars are designed and so forth, and that left-handers are at a huge disadvantage and get involved in accidents at a higher rate, suffer from addictions and so forth. And they're also known to be more artistic. I mean, it is an unbelievable book, and he basically, his whole life's work was studying handedness.
Wow.
Yeah.
You still need them.
Yeah. That's true. Chuck brings up a great point that you still need, but they are important.
Left-handed quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Steve Young.
Well, that Brian Leftwich.
Lamar Johnson.
Brian Leftwich.
I never really thought about it, right? Leftwich was left-handed.
Was he really?
Was he?
Was he?
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
You can never tell what takes this show off the rails.
We talked about kayaking last week. Yeah.
Well, that's because we were trying to make fun of you, but you were completely oblivious to it. It was over your head if you jumped, and you're tall.
Yeah.
Who's taller? You or Chuck?
Chuck's taller than me, I think. I'm 6'1".
Chuck, you would have. Tell me, you would have chewed him up the string bean, right? No, it's not kayak. You can't fit him. Make a kayak for you.
I got him in the kayak.
Chuck in a kayak.
I think Chuck.
That's called a sardine.
Chuck and I probably played ball together before. I mean, way back when. Yeah. Back when he was on the racetrack.
How old?
Just pick up, just for fun.
Just pick up games.
Yeah. All I know is. I'm still scarred from the disgrace of the horseman's performance against the jockey.
Funny. I forgot to bring that up with Todd Pletcher the other day, where the win by Life is Good, I meant to say to him, do you feel that this is going to keep you from losing your job as the coach of the basketball team?
He told me that he wanted to. he
wants out. Well, if you're gonna come up next summer, you can take over that role.
I don't
You're on a losing streak for sure.
I don't think that's the spot I'm looking for.
You take over the jocks job. Oh my god, that's too funny, unbelievable. All right, any other opinions before I send you boys on your way? I got to get Hammerly in here.
All right, I'm all set.
What do you any horse you're looking forward to the closing week? That you've been harboring.
I like to see the horse that won the Schuylerville.
Just Cindy.
Just Cindy.
Is she coming back?
She's supposed to get here 2 days ago.
The Justify daughter is his leading earner.
Yeah.
And I think was the first North American stake winner for Justify.
Yeah.
Who we just talked about with Sid.
Yeah.
And you got something? You got a secret?
Anxious for the Jockey Club Gold Cup, you know?
Yeah.
First captain, American Revolution, you know, some pretty good horses. Obviously, you know, players, you know, maybe on the periphery of the, you know, top contenders for the Breeders' Cup Classic division. But certainly players, nonetheless.
Well, and speaking of which, do you sitting here right now, we'll take a quick survey. Yeah. Epicenter as Breeders' Cup Classic winner.
Oh, legit chance.
What percentage? What percentage do you say?
Chance?
Yeah. 70?
The win?
60?
To win?
No.
Yeah.
No, it's too far away. It's too far away.
50%?
50%.
I may say even less than that.
You think 30?
If they ran it right now, I'd say that it was probably 70-75%.
Well, I mean, probably third choice, right? Behind Life is Good and Flightline. Epicenter third choice.
I don't think.
Percentage chance?
Yeah, 15%? I'd say around 20-25%.
All right. I'm curious.
Everybody's 15%.
Yeah. Well, but I'm saying, you know, let's assume that everybody gets there healthy and blah blah blah.
What happened on this weekend?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pacific Classic.
Yeah.
The flight line.
Yeah.
That goes a long way.
A minor detail.
He's a potential impotent. Impediment.
Impotent. You had it right the first time.
Hey now. Oh. How about that? You're against?
Well, they better hope not.
Are you against the speedsters?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Are you anti flight line?
No, everything. Mm. You got wait till it comes. You know,
your life is good.
Pick
a side.
How impressed were you with Epicenter?
I was really impressed.
Right?
I mean, yeah. 2 minutes and 3/5 under wraps inside the 16th. Yeah. I mean, that could have been under 2 minutes if Joel decided to.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
Of the three horses, it's the one horse of the three horses that can sit behind the other two horses.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, they're saying that Flightline can rate, but I don't know if he breaks cleanly, he can really rate.
Yeah.
So, especially with a big long run down the front stretch, it'll be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, Epicenter's done it every way you can. On the lead, he's come from last.
Yep.
He's come from the middle. You know,
and that's
testament obviously to Asmussen and what he's done with him. And
big time.
He cannot be discounted in a major Grade One dirt race. I say it all the time. Those are the races that Americans are best at, and nobody's really better than Steve. There might be a few guys in the same level as him, but that's it.
Tom Law, everybody. Saratoga, TL. John Chapazian, who you can only find in the pages of the Saratoga Special. And where are you wintering?
Melbourne, Florida.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I thought maybe you were going to go Melbourne, Australia.
That'd be nice too. Yeah,
that'd be all right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We'll get you. You know, what we'll do. We'll get your Melbourne Cup pick.
There you go.
When we get down. Do you get over to? Do you go down to Gulfstream at all, or do you cut across to Tampa?
I cut across to Tampa.
Tampa.
Yeah.
Not such a bad trip.
And it's out in the country. There's much less traffic.
That's a good point.
It's a friendly track. It's easy to get to, and it's good racing. You know.
It's very fun. It's a delightful place. Yeah. And Mrs. Thayer, who Chuck trained for many years, for Stella Thayer, God bless her. John, thank you. Good luck the rest of the way.
Yep.
6 days remain to the season, and Chapazian and Law locked in a death matched cage match. It's unbelievable.
We'll test these two to the wire.
You got
to
break that logo out again where you put our faces on that World Wrestling Federation thing.
Okay. Yeah.
You had that last year.
That's funny.
Out of the wire.
That is funny.
I want the belt.
You have the belt. What do you mean?
I want the belt. You've retired the belt.
Oh, okay.
I know.
Chapazian and Law, folks. And, you know, even though there's only one issue of the actual paper left, daily there is on the front page of thisishorseracing.com, you can just go to the front page and there's the selections listed
every day.
Every day.
Yep.
And Chapazian's is listed first.
That's only because, champ. I, that's only because I won last year by one.
There you go.
And then Thomas second for the same reason. So
our template has him just locked there. There's no way to change it. Joe wouldn't be able to change it if he wanted.
I'll be happy with a dead heat. That's because everybody's a winner.
He's being gracious.
He says that every year.
He's being gracious.
I said it before the meet, didn't I?
I know.
Before the meet, I was in the office. I started
the weekend three for the first 31 races.
Well, Seth Merrow is going to come by later. We'll see how does Seth shape up in the total standings.
He's a few back. I know he was close for a while. A
couple of years ago, you beat him.
I beat him on the last day, maybe
last day,
for second.
Yeah,
behind John, of course.
And yep.
I think John and I are running 1-2 in the whole area. So
amazing. There it is, folks. Law and Chapazian, and always a pleasure. Great to get John, and maybe Labor Day. Maybe Labor Day that we'll have another session to close things out. Let's take our second break of the morning. Chuck is hanging out, but you're gonna have to put on the headphones. He's wearing a gorgeous Expo cap that you wore in my honor. I know you did. Absolutely. And in fact, two places where I lived. And this is actually, it just occurs to me. He's got the Reds hat on, and of course I lived. You've got the Montreal hat on, where I lived 10 years, and John Chapazian and I share a hometown, the City of Village Charm, Manchester, Connecticut. That's very strange, actually. Right? It's kind of weird. 2 years in Cincinnati, 18 years in Manchester, 10 years in Montreal. So quite a percentage of my life represented by the three. Yeah, unbelievable. Very cool. Let's take a break. And we're going to call Hammer. Casey, get a hold of Hammer. We're going to start looking at Kentucky Downs. The first three cards are set, and they start tomorrow. We'll be there a week from today for day four, and the racing looks unbelievable. I don't know what else to say. But what else do we still have here this hour? We've got Hammer, then we've got Seth and Chuck. Bill Gallo. Bill Gallo coming, and we have to call Guy Torsalieri. All right? That's hour three at the races back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Thoroughbred Horse Racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule and average daily purses of $625,000. The 9-week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's 50-cent pick 5 with a low 12% takeout and a new carryover provision. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs racing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m.
Who you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in...